You're listening to a recording from the Open Society Institute, working to build vibrant and tolerant democracies worldwide. Visit us at soros.org.
Let me first introduce myself. I'm Maria Teresa Rojas, and I'm here. I work at the Open Society Institute on immigrant rights and immigration policy reform in the United States. So on behalf of OSI and the ACLU, it's a great pleasure to welcome you. Thank you for joining us, and please do make sure that you enjoy the popcorn. It's a big crowd. Actually, we have almost 100 people registered, so I do expect a lot more people trickling in. But I think it's actually the response is illustrative of how big and important this issue is. So we're very, very thrilled to have seen your interest in this issue, which is actually a topic of great importance and interest to both of our organizations, OSI and ACLU. For many years, OSI has been supporting advocates who are working to ensure justice and equality for immigrants in the United States, and partnering in a number of ways with organizations like the ACLU. And OSI has also been very committed to supporting the use of film and media and arts as a tool for social change. And as you'll see tonight, this type of film can be extremely effective as part of an advocacy campaign. But before we turn to the film, just a couple of items. This event is being audio recorded, and it'll be podcast and on our website. And also, this event is really possible thanks to the work of the ACLU and their own partners in this campaign. But tonight, I really owe to Nicole Keefe, who is a former colleague of ours here at OSI and now works at ACLU. Thank you so much. And to Shruti Garg, who works with me here at OSI. Thank you so much for both of you for putting all this together. Thank you. But now, just a little bit of background on the topic of the film, the increased reliance on detention. Immigration detention has exploded over the last 10 years or so, particularly after 9/11, as I'm sure you all know. In 2005, the government shifted from a policy of releasing immigrants that entered illegally and giving them a date in court to appear in court, shifted from that practice to a policy of catching and detaining those immigrants as opposed to releasing them, and sometimes detaining them indefinitely. At the same time, they also announced the creation of a new form of detention called family detention. So in 2006, ICE opened the Hutto Family Detention Center in Texas, and it was a former minimum security prison owned by the Corrections Corporation of America. ICE used it to house families and their children. Many of them were asylum seekers. And Hutto actually was supposed to be really a model of family detention, where parents would be allowed to stay together with their children instead of being separated. But it really very quickly became evident that detention conditions there were unacceptable, both from a legal and human rights standards. Children, as you'll see, were, for example, required to wear uniforms, prison uniforms, They were given very little educational programming, and sometimes guards will threaten them with separation from their parents as a way of controlling them, you know, if they misbehaved. As a result of a multi-pronged campaign that involves involved litigation, federal advocacy, grassroots organizing, and media work, ICE recently announced that families will no longer be housed at HUDO. Now, this is, of course, a huge victory to all the advocates that have been working on this issue. But as you'll see tonight, there really is a lot more work that remains to be done. A key component of that campaign, of the HUDO campaign, has been this film, The Least of These. This is a very acclaimed documentary that has been shown in many festivals across the country and to members of Congress or the congressional staffers. And it's a documentary that traces the experiences of a handful of families detained at HUDO, and also shows the advocacy efforts to improve the conditions there. After the film, which lasts about an hour, you'll have an opportunity to speak with two of the advocates that are profiled in the film, ACLU attorney Vanita Gupta and Barbara Hines, as an attorney from the University of Texas. And of course, you'll also be able to speak with the film's producer, Marcy Garriott, and two additional directors of the film are also here, and we'll introduce them right after the film. So for now, sit back, and we'll be back in about an hour. So let's now see The Least of These. Thank you.
By the way, President Obama speaking at the end, it was in the taped interview that he had had with Rick Warren, right, Marcy?
Yes, that's correct.
Before he became president. And so.
You know, first of all, apologies to the producers and directors of the film, since as former a filmmaker myself, nothing worse than getting the credits cut off at the end, and that's why I like to stay to the very end, because you never know what comes at the end. So sorry about that. We apologize. But really, I just also like to ask you to join me one more time in applauding this tremendous effort by the producers and directors, and a very successful effort in capturing the nature of the issue and illustrating the power of this medium bring such attention to this issue and the campaign that came with it. So thank you very much again. Great job. We thought that that we're really not here to do a very formal panel presentation by any means. The goal here is now to have a conversation with our guests. So, but before we get there, so you start thinking of your comments and questions and things you want to engage our invited panelists. Perhaps I just ask Vanita to give us an update on what's happened since HUDO, since the production of the film, in terms of HUDO and in terms of the detention practices.
Sure. Thank you all for coming out this evening. Just really quickly, you know, the last time I was at a screening of this documentary was at the end of July, and it was at the New York International Latino Film Festival, and the first question that we got was, you know, what is going to happen after August 29th, 2009. And at that time, I had an answer that I didn't very much like. It was that we really didn't know what was going to happen after August 29th, 2009. Somebody asked me if I could extend the settlement, and I said we can't. We could file new litigation. We're going to be monitoring. Barbara Hines has her students in the UT Immigration Clinic in Hutto, and we would be trying to monitor conditions, but we would lose any ability to enforce the settlement. And we are in a very different place today, kind of low and kind of shockingly, although it took the effort of a lot of people. But just about a week later, actually, on August 6th, ICE announced as part of an intention to overhaul the detention system, which is really truly at a crisis point in this country right now, announced that it would be closing and ending family detention at Hutto. They will still be using the facility to detain women who are, again, non-criminal immigrant women. But so the facility would not entirely be shut down, but families at the very least would no longer be sent there. And it was a tremendous victory for everyone who had been involved in the campaign, simply because, as the film documents, Hutto was going to be the first of many facilities that ICE planned to open up to detain families. And so the fact that there were advocates at all different, coming from all different backgrounds, documentarians, litigators, activists, that had kind of focused on this site and had been able to achieve the goal of ending family detention at this very troubling facility was a very big victory. At the same time, family detention, and you know, Barbara and I had been doing kind of in an effort to do whatever we could about the end of the settlement, had been trying to have conversations with people on Capitol Hill, and it was great that to have this film screened with staffers there, and had also been communicating with ICE a lot. ICE had been down to visit the facility, and they, the new folks at ICE from in the Obama administration, particularly a woman by the name of Dr. Dora Shriro, had visited Hutto, and we knew she was going to be producing a report, and we knew that she knew about the end of our settlement, and we had sent her a couple of letters really detailing our concerns. And so it's our sense that the announcement on immigration overhaul came when it did because they knew that the settlement was about to end, and so they folded in. The one concrete thing that we know about this potential overhaul is that Hutto will be shut down. Unfortunately, a lot else remains pretty unknown, and it's not clear to us the extent to which anything really will be meaningfully overhauled, and so there's a lot of work to do. We have 33 to 34,000 civil immigration detainees in detention in this country every day. And by the end of 2009, this government will have detained 440,000 people this year alone. And these are civil immigration detainees. We are at a serious crisis point. Over 100 people have died in immigration detention since 2003. And the only reason we know about that number is in part because of very long, entrenched FOIA litigation done by my colleagues at the ACLU to try to seek information about deaths in detention. And as part of that, ICE just recently announced that 10 more people had gone undetected by ICE officials themselves, or unreported, I should say. And so medical care and mental health care is at a huge crisis point for at these immigration facilities. There's around 400 facilities housing these detainees, these men, women, and children. And so there's a lot of work that remains to be done. I think Hutto has at least energized some portion of the community, but clearly it's one piece in a much bigger puzzle that we need to really address in the next several years.
Thank you very much for that. So again, I'll invite you to come up to the mic if you can, again, because we are recording, and feel free to ask any questions or comments or add to the conversation that we're starting. Anyone?
And also the other question, if you So, you know, that's a question that we have confronted since we started the litigation. Because it was we were very clear that we were not advocating for separation of families, and we tried to make that very clear in our litigation, what we said to the federal judge, what we said to the media. But I think really to look at it that way, that it's either that families are going to be separated or that they're going to be detained, really buys into what the rationale of ICE was. It was, well, the reason, you know, we have to set up these prisons for children because this is the only way we can do it. When in fact, since for the last 4 years in the Department of Homeland Security appropriations bills from Congress, there was money set aside to explore alternatives to detention. And alternatives to detention can mean release into the community, which is what happened to a lot of families at Hutto. And many of the families that my clinic represented and my students have actually won their asylum cases. It can be release into programs that the Vera Institute had, which was more supervised with a curfew and social workers and access to legal counsel. That's another alternative. A more extreme alternative is the ISAP program, which is the intensive supervision program, and the last is ankle bracelets. But there's a whole spectrum of things. So I think the idea that if you shut down Hutto, it means that families will be separated is really the wrong approach to this whole thing. And so what we're really been advocating very strongly, and when we met with Dr. Schriro, who incidentally is now going to take over the New York prison system and has left DHS, was really, and she was very sensitive to this, to really explore alternatives. So I guess that's my answer to that. We certainly don't favor the separation of families, but I think closing Hutto doesn't mean and should never mean that families should be separated.
And the question about one other facility.
Sure. There's one other family detention facility in York, Pennsylvania, and it's called the Berks facility. And it's a very different looking facility. It's a converted nursing home. The contractor actually just changed. I'm not sure who the new contractor is. Do you guys
know?
Used to be the county.
And it was licensed.
It was a licensed facility and has 84 beds. And what we had heard, because we were very concerned about what would happen to the families at Hutto once we heard that the facility was being shut down, is that either families would be transferred to Berks, but we knew that Berks was at that time full, so that was confusing, or released on supervision. And what we ultimately learned is actually last Friday, the last family left Hutto, so Hutto is now not operating anymore as a family detention center. And but that most of the families actually had been released on supervision, so that we know that ICE can keep families together and not detain them. And but the Berks facility is still operating. And we're not clear as to what, I mean, we aren't clear. What we've been advocating for is the end of family detention altogether. And we are concerned about problems at Berks, and there are a number of advocates looking into the Berks facility as well right now, because we know that there have been families that have been there for over 2 years. And so while the conditions may not be prison-like, having children in detention like that for over 2 years is very, very problematic. And so we're investigating that. But it's not clear what ICE's intentions are with family detention or with the Berks facility in particular either. So that's, again, this is part of the ongoing advocacy that we're trying to do around this issue.
I'd like to play devil's advocate for a minute. Aren't we allowed to be a little bit, at least a bit cynical about the intentions that these immigrants that do come into this country have, and the fact that maybe that the United States doesn't necessarily want to be involved? Okay, we can assume that they're going about it the wrong way, but there are a lot of them come over here seeking asylum, and there are a lot of men come over here seeking work and green cards and stuff. I mean, maybe we should have more of a hands-on. I mean, what is the actual diplomatic response strategy towards immigration that this country has, especially in the countries in Central America, Honduras, El Salvador? Because they're still coming, whether or not they come here illegally, legally, to be detaining them. Yeah, that's wrong, but is it wrong in the fact that we're detaining them unconscionably in record numbers, or is it wrong in the fact that we really don't have know what else to do with them? I mean, are we going to get involved in the domestic problems? Are we going to get involved with the economic problems? I mean, what is the strategy? What are we working towards? There has to be an end to this at some point.
Well, I think that's a very complicated, complex issue that would probably take a lot of really time to answer. I mean, I appreciate your question because that is a question that people have asked. So a couple answers. I mean, we are signatories to the Refugee Convention, and therefore we have obligations under international law to protect refugees and people seeking asylum. Under our system, there is no way that someone can seek refugee status in their own country. You have to leave your country to seek asylum. If you come to the border and you ask for asylum under the system that we have, which included people at Hutto who did not enter the United States illegally, they go to the border and they ask for asylum. We represented numerous Iraqi Christians. We represented Mexicans who were fleeing threats and all sorts of things in border cities, and those people are arrested. So I think one of the things is to recognize that not everybody at Hutto or in detention centers have actually entered the United States illegally. So that's one thing. The other thing is I think in the whole immigration debate, you know, the whole idea about, well, what they should just do is get in line. There's really no line to get into, and I think that somehow is something that really is missed when people discuss this debate. If you want to come and, you know, bus our tables or pick our lettuce or take care of your elderly parent, there is no legal visa that someone can get. And even if you have a family member to come, the lines are really, really long. So part of this is let's reform our immigration system. Let's do something with the 12 million people who are working here, who are not going to go home, and who are taking jobs generally that Americans aren't going to do. So I think it's just, you know, it's all of these pieces. And then I guess your question about, well, are we going to solve the domestic problems? I mean, I think you really need to look at immigration from a global standpoint. And it's not just a national issue. I mean, this is about part globalization. And these migration issues of of countries where there's less economic opportunity, where there's civil wars, where there's persecution, where there's violence. I mean, this is happening all over the world. And so I think, you know, really we need to be looking at a really sort of more global strategy to address this issue. I think it's very, very complicated, but that's kind of my short answer to a very long and important question.
No, I think you did an excellent job, and I like to direct people to a very comprehensive, multi-pronged campaign that is underway to indeed reform our immigration system. It's called Reform Immigration for America. And there you'll be able to get information about the various efforts underway by multiple stakeholders involved together, working together on solutions, finding solutions, and recognizing the urgency of reforming the system. Anyway, but a lot of very good information there. Reform Immigration for America is the campaign. Anyone else? Yes, please.
Hello. I just have a question of something I've actually never really understood. What's the government's justification for outsourcing to a facility like CCA? And when it costs us so much more money, why don't we keep it within the government, you know, when they're not licensed and there's no regulation? I've never really understood. It doesn't even make economic sense. So.
There's a lot of different explanations for it, but, you know, CCA, there's some fundamental truth about some of these companies, which is that they are corporations that have, I mean, CCA had very strong ties in the Bush administration. Actually, the family that owns the Corrections Corporation of America in Tennessee had very strong ties with the Bush administration, and there was a market in the 90s when we were expanding prisons at just a phenomenal rate, where the government simply couldn't keep up with the prison building, the need to build prisons, or not the need, but the created need to build prisons. And so companies kind of came in and filled this niche and started understanding that there was real profit to be made. It has never made, I don't have an explanation actually for why ICE was spending $2.8 million a month to use Hutto and use CCA to run that facility. I think it kind of it's beyond any explanation. But when the New Yorker reporter had done investigation, she actually uncovered all these close ties between the CCA, the family that owns CCA, and the Bush administration. And it turned out that as we started to rethink some criminal justice policies and started to understand that the prison building of the 90s was just going completely out of control and started a little bit to cut back, some of the private prison companies actually ended up going into bankruptcy. And the federal government essentially bailed out CCA and GEO, but certainly CCA, by giving them new immigration contracts. And these immigration contracts are one way that some of these private prison companies are now making a lot of money. Now, most immigration detainees are actually not housed or detained in private facilities. They're actually being detained in county jails, or in a patchwork of county jails and prison facilities, and I can't say that they are very much better. It's just that there's a slightly greater degree of accountability when you have a government-operated facility than you do with a private prison corporation. So that's not a very satisfying answer, but honestly, it's because it kind of defies common sense as to. But it really it was just an industry that got created, and that was creating jobs too for a lot of these towns. So there might have been, there are some fundamental economic rationales for some of the rural economies that actually ended up thriving because of prisons in their communities, and so that was an added benefit.
There are a couple of parts to this. One is just, do you think with the new administration there's a better chance of change, and if so, how can we go about it? But then the other thing in response to what you said about the building of prisons, one of the things that bothers me is that the movement to fight the building of prisons is separate from the movement to protect detainees. How do we get together? Because we would be much more effective if we did that.
Let me just add one thing real quick while you're...
Yeah,
go ahead.
But there is an organization called Grassroots Leadership, based out of which state? It's Tennessee or something like that. Anyway, they're active in Austin. They were one of the people active in the HODO issues, and they do take head on this issue of privatization of prisons, including detention. So there's at least one organization that has combined those. I also wanted to add one other quick thing on how CCA got involved. One of the local advocacy groups in Austin did uncover recently documents showing that CCA resisted taking on family detention, that they actually didn't want that. So it wasn't purely profit motive that they were trying to take on as many detention jobs as possible. They actually resisted, saying that they didn't have background in handling children. And it was ICE that continued to push them to take the job, which was quite interesting. So this just came out maybe a month ago.
There's also another organization, Detention Watch Network, in Washington, D.C., which focuses on detention of immigrants, but also has looked at the issue of privatization. And I just might add about, in answer to someone else's question, I mean, privatization was the big issue in the 90s. I mean, everything was supposed to be privatized. And so I think this was just one more piece of the privatization movement that was pushed by the last administration.
So the first part of your question was about the Obama administration. I don't think any of us are under any illusion that the Obama administration is the reason why HUDO is no longer being used for family detention. We kicked and screamed when the conditions were at their worst during the Bush administration, and ICE was digging in their heels and, in fact, had put out a request for proposals to open up several other facilities. So that's a good sign. But, I can't say very much more than that right now. I think that the announcement that the Obama administration made to try to create what they call a truly civil detention system. Right now, our immigration detention system looks pretty criminal-like, resembles our criminal justice system. We know that they've made this announcement. We understand their intentions, and we are kind of cautiously optimistic. But advocates are very concerned that the announcement that they've made is really about a reorganization of what really exists right now. They're not talking about a reduction in beds, and they're not a big issue for advocates, and particularly at the ACLU, is that ICE has detention standards that are not legally enforceable. They are not binding. So they can be guideposts for ICE internally, but when it comes to detecting and uncovering abuses, advocates can't sue to enforce them. And ICE continues to resist that today. And so there are a lot of things carrying over from earlier days right now. And so it really remains to be seen as to whether the change in the administration is going to make that big of a difference with our detention system. We hope so, but the details remain to be seen.
You know, and the other thing in terms of advocacy, there are several bills that are either being crafted or going to be introduced to really try to regulate or diminish family detention and to set out enforceable detention standards. So, you know, that's another thing to be following the legislative advocacy and to try to weigh in to see if we can actually get some of this changed by statute, because that would obviously be enforceable.
Yes, something that was just hinted at, I think, in the film. You had a scene of some kind of a local government meeting with people wearing T-shirts of the same color in the audience, and I guess you also showed the publisher of the Taylor newspaper. I'm wondering what was the response of the local community to the efforts that you were making to bring to light the conditions at a facility that apparently would provide employment locally. I was wondering how that played out.
I think the jobs, when you go to Taylor, Texas, it's a lot of closed storefronts, and the jobs piece is what was very compelling, obviously, to folks in Taylor, Texas about opening Hutto again and using it as a detention facility. And so I don't feel like in the litigation that we had that much support. In fact, I had never interacted with the editor of the Taylor Daily Press, and so when I saw the documentary, I was like, "Wow, where was this guy?" We hadn't had that much interaction with him, and so I don't. But there were activists, and there are activists also locally who have attended every county commissioner's meeting, have spoken out, have been very vocal about their anger or their feeling that their community really should not be detaining kids, and there are a number of folks who have done that, but by and large, I don't feel like we had that much support.
Well, it's sort of interesting because the people in the T-shirts were obviously the employees at the CCA. That's who they were. And so when they all stood up and cheered, those were all the employees that worked at CCA. I mean, we were very careful to try not to sort of demonize these people. These are just, you know, low-wage workers trying to get a job. But one of the things about all this prison industry is the pay is really low. You know, this is like minimum wage jobs with no career advancement. And so the whole idea that this is sort of sold as like economic development, it's pretty limited. You know, economic development. I think there's some people that argue that if you become a prison town, you're not going to be able to attract any other kind of industry into your town that really needs some economic development. But what I actually thought was, although I would say this is a very conservative county, you know, unlike Travis County, Austin, where I live, you know, which is the little blue dot in a very big red state, though Williamson County is really changing, but it's a very, very conservative county. So I actually thought there became a pretty organized group in that sense. I mean, I wouldn't say it was the majority, but there really was a very vocal group of Georgetown advocates. And when you're looking at an advocacy strategy, I think that was really important. It wasn't a bunch of people from New York or from Austin. From Austin, it's just like being from New York if you go to Williamson County. It's not much difference. But, and so I think that was a really important piece because it didn't make, I could go testify at the Williamson County Commissioners meeting, but I didn't live in that county. And so I actually think that although it was a small group, they played a really important role in, like, being there, protesting, and going to the county commissioners' meetings.
Feel free also to ask of about our filmmakers and directors as well, of your experiences. Is anybody interested in that? Marcy, you can tell us a little bit more about your whole experience as a filmmaker and the role that that played as well. Or can you share anything about your experiences?
We really got pulled into this through Barbara, a friend of ours, and she was so distressed when she first started seeing clients, at the facility, and she was distressed not only by what was happening to them there, but by the lack of public awareness of what was happening. And so we got on board thinking it would be a short film, actually, like a 6 or 8 month project, but ended up being a much longer and more in-depth project. I guess the one observation I might add to all this is that one thing that's interesting is that as filmmakers, it is important to present a balanced point of view, or we feel it is, that people don't like to be lectured to, they don't like to be told, audiences don't like to be told what the answer is, they like to be able to think things through for themselves. And just from an integrity point of view, it's a good idea to present a balanced picture. And one thing that was interesting in this project, it was actually difficult to do that in the sense that we were dealing with very articulate, thoughtful advocates for making changes to Hutto and closing down Hutto, but ICE repeatedly declined to make their own case. We were not interested in speaking with extremist points of view, people with hate-filled anti-immigrant points of view. You can always find those kind of people. We're not interested in giving a voice to those kind of people, but we were interested in giving a voice to thoughtful defenses of this approach. So again, that audiences could see what the advocates were saying, what the families were saying, and what the government was saying. But ICE did repeatedly refuse to be involved, which left us to only rely on the public record, in effect, and Fox News and things like that. And they even tried to block our access to that press tour that you see at the end. Having initially said, no, you can't have an interview, but you can go to this press tour, then no, we've changed our minds, you can't even go to the press tour, which we had to escalate back. So it is kind of interesting, the challenges sometimes that face documentary filmmakers who, in fact, are trying to present balanced points of view.
Hi, I'm originally from Texas, and it was some of the best news I've heard in years when I got the news about the Obama administration's decision regarding Hutto. I wanted to add a quick comment and ask another question. I came to New York to study investigative journalism at Columbia, and one of the things I did there was a project called businessofdetention.com, where we followed the money, trying to answer the question that you asked. And it's interesting, there's a large sum of money coming from CCA, and there are PACs and things like that towards the Republicans under the Bush administration, but the money is now flowing towards the Democrats. So I think, we have to watch out for that. There's also a revolving door. So when you look at former CCA officials who are now working for the federal government or vice versa, you can see how policy decisions are shaped. And it's another reason we might see immigration reform head towards more enforcement, unfortunately. And my question was, as you said, it's really hard to kind of get to ICE sometimes. And I was wondering, I know it's perhaps hard to say exactly some details, but if you know anything about Schriero's report, when it might be released regarding her decisions of what to do with detention?
Well, we know that it was passed on to her hires up on Friday because I think that was her last day at ICE. And so none of us have seen it or know of anything in its substance, and we're awaiting it. But of course, also that's a report with recommendations, and then it will remain to be seen what will be implemented from it. So unfortunately, I don't have much more to offer except that we're waiting to see what will come of a report. We are we were a little disappointed that she was not going to be taking the position of directing the office of the new Office of Detention Policy, which was one of part of the Obama administration's announcement, simply because that would have put her in a role to implement some of her own recommendations. But so we'll see. We're waiting, like you are.
Are there any other comments or questions? If not, I'll invite you to have a little more wine and to chat informally with everyone here. Thank you very much for your participation, and thank you all.